Key wishing you good life.
Kwee kwee.
Yo weak sis.
Tanet e. Nega dakote.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Okay, Mistoni Tanikuna to Yipita. No, to touch a key to be Genek one, 60 gags to be. My name is Eugene Braverock. I'm usually in front of the camera as an actor. You might have seen me in Dark Winds, That Dirty Black Bag, or a demigod in Wonder Woman. The beauty of that role is that I was able to introduce myself in my Blackfoot language. I thought if Wonder Woman could be a demigod, why couldn't my character?
Okay, Itaniku, Napi.
And I'm Diana.
In Blackfoot culture, Napi is our storyteller. He was put here to teach us how to learn what to do and what not to do. In this episode of Words and Culture, I'm speaking with Jesse DeRoger. Jesse is a language keeper and a teacher. He introduces himself in the Blackfoot way.
Okay, nixo quacks. Ixikitsimatsinahpoa. Nistilanako knitkumil. Na, kaksin nan understand in that big scene. It's in chkak. Matame sumo. Oh, mamskabi big, any. Upkakakatsis. Man ninex. Itskinax. Demixipokex. Come on, nin understawa. McQuee sap up. What's your name in that? Oh, it's a pokal. Namma nach, Sanista Matok Kumyaki, I get it to Kena. It's in Skagasinate, we. Can you mean he's joking? This guns in the Bokpinan. He take out Yakyop, it asks any match to Kyop. Don't go to Pinan, I'm scabby peak, can he? Which a piece is Sakta, Ginisinski is Sakta. Ah, Nixist, Namma, Nixist. Anista matokomyaki, xachtoat apanaki. Gima nin anista akepistio. Na nin inamani xist itskinapi, nitsi tsepeta pio. Inistunan, tsepeta pisinan, skapi pikani nitsitapi, tsepeta pio. Oka nit. Nitanax not to come ya nitanax ki not to come no kosix. Nitanax anistaya machi safe ya ki ki tatsiki konamani kits the kyaki. Ima no kosix anistaya ini puka ki chakum. Ma chakum uchinch kaka. Nax ki man nixus maxix anista chakum. My name is Jesse DeRoger. You know, I'm from Browning, Montana, and that's the proper way I was taught to introduce myself, where I come from. And my English name, Jesse, I was named after my adopted grandpa, Amwakiman, or Apitskinaskumapi. His name was Jess Blackweasel. Mm. I guess he was my first connection to stories, to language, Nitsipoksin. But I was raised in the traditional ways. My dad, Mike DeRoger, and my mother, Joycelyn Davis DeRoger, she's since passed, but they were very connected culturally to Nanamskan, Okimi, Ukan, my children. They all have Blackfoot names and speak the language. Jada, the oldest, offers on a centering pole woman. My oldest daughter, Sienna, her Blackfoot name is Loon Woman. And then my boys' names are Buffalo Child. And then my youngest boy is Jachkum, Earth. That's where the last name Ground comes from. Mm. On my mother's side, my fourth great-grandmother, Mary Ground, she lived to be in between 107 and 112, but when I was 3 days old, she gave me my first Blackfoot name, Asinapui. But where I really got connected in the language, I started out in public school in kindergarten, first grade. Well, my mom didn't really want her baby, my younger brother, to go to public school, and there was a guy in our community, Apinakwapita, Daryl Robes Kip, who later became one of my mentors. He opened the first immersion school in Browning, and my brother went right into that in first grade. And by third grade, I was skipping school so much to go there, so I wanted to play basketball. So by fourth grade, I was fully immersed in Kutsud school. My first language teacher, she's still alive today, Sikskyaki, many other people who came through and taught me a lot through that school. But that really gave me a good base understanding. And then being connected to the ceremonial ways, I got to use a lot of the language outside of school, because the school was great for a baseline. But getting out into practical storytelling, speaking, there's ceremonial language, you know, it all comes full circle. And having an understanding of Kipaitapis and on our way of life, I think, is what helped really connect me. If I go back and think, well, what's the Blackfoot word for this? Or how would we think about this in the Blackfoot thought? Because it conflicts a lot with this noun-based English. And after graduating, I went back into Browning and I taught at the immersion school from 2017 to 2025. And I also taught at our community college from 2018 to 2025. So I got experience of both children, K through 8, as well as adult learners. And there's a big difference in learning and understanding. But I got a bit of experience on the teaching end of it all, too, coming full circle. And currently, I'm taking a break, but I'm still connected within the language community. You know, it'll always draw me in, and I continue to learn. I don't ever claim to be an elder or an expert. By no means am I an expert or an elder in anything, you know. But I was very fortunate to be around really brilliant elders and great people, mentors. So the little bit of knowledge I picked up was credited to them, I would say.
From growing up and learning the language and then now with teaching with the kids, would you say that the way you learned is different from the kids that are growing up now?
I was very fortunate to have a lot more first language speakers around in my generation, you know. Throughout my life, I remember one really key thing. My mom always pushed me on elder speakers. Sometimes I'd stay with them. I was adopted. My adopted dad is my Martin Engel child in the blood. But my mother would tell me, this guy's a speaker. Go talk with him. Go see him. You know, some of our elders who've passed. And as I grew up, it was like I had two groups of friends. You know, one was the elders who I spoke Blackfoot with, and one was my friends, my age group, you know, and it was completely different, our interactions. But as I started getting into high school and older, a lot of that elder generation started to pass away. Canada's very fortunate because they still have many first language speakers. And what I mean by first language speakers, I mean people who grew up with it in their home and who learned it before English or before puberty. So there's a lot more children speaking language today in Browning than there has been in the past 100 years. But that older generation, because of boarding schools and, you know, wasn't legal in the States until 1978. My parents are products of boarding schools, grandparents. So it's up to our children today. They are the real first language speakers, all the graduates from immersion school. And it's up to us to really carry it on and to utilize the few elders that we have in our community, but especially utilize our elders from Canada, Blood, Northern Piegan, and Siksikaw. People like to talk about the differences in dialect, which is common across any language, but ultimately it's the exact same language, exact same history. We're the exact same people, just separated by that medicine line.
Our people had their languages ripped away from them in residential schools in Canada and in the United States. It was the boarding schools that did the same thing. But we have people who have held on to the language and taught their children. And now these children have grown up and are teaching the next generation of language speakers. There's teachings that come through immersion and knowing your language that I don't think you can learn in a classroom or from books. I asked Jesse what his experience as a teacher and how it shapes the way he teaches kids.
The children, it's easy. Like, that's why I say I never had to really try to learn. As a kid, just being exposed to it, that's where I got it. And when I teach children, you know, I'll tell them a word, they'll start spitting it out right away. And they have no fear of mispronouncing it. You know, I'll tell them, you know, they'll just cut it short. No, slow it down. But they're just adamant about it. And after 2 days of saying it, they got it. But when you switch to adults, there's so much fear, so much hesitation, and the fear of being judged, the fear of making mistakes. And that's something we got to drop right away. We got to understand we're all going to make mistakes. Shoot, I've made plenty of mistakes in front of elders and teachers and people. But adults are so afraid. Oh, I can't say it. I got to hear it 1,000. I can't say it. Oh, I was corrected once. And, you know, a lot of language teachers, they come from residential and boarding schools. So they didn't come from a place where compliments are coming out of them, you know. They come from a place where punishment's coming out. So they'll tell you right away when you do something wrong. But I can say as a immersion school student, I've never had any of my teachers tell me, you speak real good, you know, but because I never got those compliments, but it wasn't because they didn't feel it or think it. They told other people and the word got back to me, but it was how they grew up in residential and boarding school, that older generation. And I was corrected a lot by all of them. You didn't say this right, you know. It's not, ooh, dookies, that's kidney. Oh, dookies, ear, you know. They'll tell you right away. And we got to forgive some of those teachings because that was something that was put on us. And so for adults, when I taught them, I was a lot more gentle. And I tried to be a lot more comforting. And I told them from day one, we're all going to make mistakes. I won't make anybody speak out loud, but just know you're not going to ever make a mistake. Just try it. Right. That's all you have to do is try. Because kids, you don't need to tell kids any of that. They're just 100%, you know.
I mean, I think that's the key, that immersion. But also when you go home, I mean, I heard stories too, like you have it at school, but then you go home and you don't have nobody to talk to.
And that was something my mom did for us. But as a teacher at Cutswood, the staff noticed it right away. And so what they would do is they created these homeschool kits where children, and we noticed the kids were playing games on their iPads or whatever. So we started incorporating, instead of competing against technology or what the kids are doing, we started to bring language in their home and said, all right, now your parents, teach your parents this. Here's a game you could play with your siblings, you know, because it wasn't just the individual who's learning Blackfoot. When we would select students, we would say, that family has to all support this language. You know, it can't just be individual. Because if the language ends at the door, it's not going anywhere. You know, it has to carry into the household, into your way of life. Your whole, you pack the piece and that. Our whole way of life has to be immersed into that. And it takes time, it's slow. But to truly get a grasp of our identity, I would suggest that's what it takes, is the full understanding, not just language words, not just simple phrases, but waking up, you know, going to bed, you know, so all through the day, you should have reminders around you.
Elder Ingshade, he's from Kainai. He messaged and he called me up and he was telling me something he was saying in the home. That's where it needs to be. I mean, we have to balance that out between English and our own language. But in the home, if we know it in Blackfoot, say it in Blackfoot. Don't ever say it in English. Like, what time is it? Say do. You know what I mean? Or or tsikakumem, I love you. Or
yeah, and as simple as, I remember when I was a kid and I'd go up and stay with my blood family. They would, just the kids, they would say, kih, let's go. You go. Kika, wait. You know, just simple, short, right? Ma, you know. And I remember my dad said, well, when I was a kid, people all said that. You know, it was common. And a lot of times slang becomes common. But those things should be encouraged, you know. Why say here when you could say ma? Ma tit or ma tos, right? Mm. Why say go when you could say go? Why say let's go geh? You know, just short phrases that everyone can incorporate, everyone can use. And one time at a conference, this woman, she said, well, how do you save our language? Like putting it on me or whatever, or teachers. I said, it's up to every one of us. It's up to you in your home. I said, if you know two Blackfoot words, use them. Try to learn three. Try to learn four. Use them. Teach the people in your house those four words. Maybe they know four. You've got eight, you know. So I said, it's up to all of us. It isn't one person. You can't blame it all on elders or the children or these people. It's up to all of us every day.
Well, I think that's the difference of I mean, that's where you gotta, where you take that extra step in your own learning, because right now, even at university level, you're learning numbers, colors, feelings, directions, or clothing, body parts. But there's another level of putting those all together.
And that's the thing with a verb language. You know, you're describing action. But for example, numbers. You're just in a classroom. We're all taught. But when you're counting animate things like horses, you know, there's a slight change. When you're counting days of the week or days of the month, you know, money, you know, you know, so things change and you got to understand it's not set in stone. It's not a noun. But you have to understand the story aspect. And that's why I encourage people, learn an introduction, because there's a flow to it, and learn a prayer. I know we didn't have just simple prayers, but if people memorize it, they get that pitch, that accent. They see how it flows, you know. And those two things, a prayer and an introduction, can get people, just if they memorize it. You don't got to know what you're saying. If you could memorize it, you can have those things internally. You know, we're all ingrained. Like I said, we've spoke Blackfoot for thousands of years. We've only spoken English for a few generations, four tops. So it's easy for us to go back and restore that knowledge. It just takes some work, you know.
Were you taught to listen to the language before speaking it? And is there any practices that help you learn that patience?
Oh, yes. Well, if you've ever been around Blackfoot ceremonies or Blackfoot ceremony people, you learn patience real quick. I got corrected a lot for not sitting still. But another thing that helped me, too, hunting, being out in the bush, tracking game and stuff, being quiet, being slow, sitting and waiting, you know, as an adult. And then everything today is instant gratification, you know. But I remember my grandpa Jess, other people, they'd tell a story for 2 days, you know. One sitting, they'd go an hour and a half. Okay, up in Akusi. Tomorrow evening, I'll tell you the story, you know. So you had to wait. So it's just the practice of patience. And sometimes the outcome isn't what you expect. You know, you'll hear a whole story, and at the end, it'll be, is this joking? You know, it'll be a joke. Or it's like, but it's all useful, though. I just encourage people. That's a part of it as well. Just like our humor. Our humor bleeds through everything. We can't forget that. There's those little things that people try to not include or forget about, but that's all part of it. And, yeah, just being patient. As a learner, I've seen plenty of adults get very frustrated. And one thing I noticed, musicians, people who have an ear for music, whether it's powwow or guitar or Western, they seem to have a better grasp of language, but I think it's because they know they have to practice at home. So if someone playing the guitar, you know, they'll go through an hour-long instruction, but at home, they're learning how to pick and how to do the chords. Someone powwow sings, they know They can't just walk up to a drum. If you're fortunate enough to learn a song off of ones, that's great. But most people, you got to sit at home and really hammer it in. Majority of other people, they don't understand that it takes that practice when nobody's looking. And they assume, oh, I'm going to go into class. I'm going to hear these words and remember them. But, like, there's been studies that show to learn any new phrase, you know, to learn a new language, it takes 10,000 hours. To learn a new instrument, it's like 8,000 hours. Mm. But a lot of that is done in your own home by yourself most of the time. So my teachers would tell us, and you got nobody to talk to, you know, talk to your dogs. With dummy tags. What's in it? Get dummy tags. Get tools. See, mix your cats, your dogs, your horses, whatever you've got. Any animals at home? And I spoke to this one elder, and he lived off the reservation for a while. And he said, when I'd get lonely, I'd go into the trees. I'd talk Blackfoot to myself, you know. So just getting out and talking, I think, is helpful for learners. You know, whether or not you're going to butcher it or whatever, just get used to talking, speaking. Because you think about babies. And when they start talking, they don't come out of the womb. Hi, Dad. Hi, Mom. How's it going? You know, it takes years. At least my kids didn't. You know, they fumble around. Now, you know, my boy's still struggling sometimes with his R sounds or whatever. Knocks for socks, you know. And you don't say, oh, damn it, look, you got to say, no, you're just gentle. You just keep repeating. Mm-hmm. And that, over time, they get it, you know. But think about a baby. How long does it take for a baby to get up and say, hello, my name is this, I come from here? It takes a while. So patience is really key in all that.
Well, I was going to ask you, what mistakes did you make learning Blackfoot that you now can help create safer learning spaces for young speakers or new speakers?
Oh, geez. I made a lot of mistakes, but I don't know if... But they're all helpful for me in the end, you know. In the way I look at it, like I said, the amount of language I know, I could say, like, it's coming up. If you ever climb the Nanticoke or any mountain, when you get to the top, you get a full 360-degree view of Kitauksinan, our territory. As a language teacher, my job is a trail guide. You know, I can tell there's many trails up this mountain. As a teacher, you promote one. You find one, you build it up. You tell people, this is a good trail that I helped build. There's other ones, but I can't carry you up this mountain. You know, I encourage people, it's up to you. I could show you the way, and I can tell you how beautiful the view is up there, Machuapio. But you have to put in the steps to get there. And regardless if the people choose my trail or another trail, the goal is just to check out that view, you know. Some people, they need to see the written. They need to write it all out. Some people need pictographs. Some people need to just hear it. I'll never say this one way is the one that works or this one don't work. I'll never run down any programs, any teachers. I encourage all of them, you know. And every year I hear about new methods, new curriculums, new ways, and I support them all. I just have encouragement, you know.
Just have encouragement. I like that. I think that goes along with everything in life. To encourage, to motivate, to inspire, to learn and to grow. Jesse DeRoger is a language keeper and a teacher in Browning, Montana. My name is Eugene Braverock, your host for the Blackfoot episodes. To hear all of our episodes of Words and Culture, please visit our website at www.wordsandculture.ca. And remember to check us out on socials. Just search Words and Culture. Or we'll see you later.
and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Amia.
Yami.
Kachu nautano.
Halakasla.
Gitaya kitamatnuhua. We'll see you later.
This is Bird Note. The fluting song of the wood thrush is an ethereal sound of summer in North America. From April to September, these robin-sized songsters serenade deciduous forests of the eastern U.S. and Canada. Each fall, they migrate to rainforests from southern Mexico to Panama, where they call to each other from the underbrush. For wood thrushes, not just any woods will do. They depend on large blocks of intact forest throughout their range. Unfortunately, wood thrushes are losing habitat as humans convert vibrant forests to pastures, mines, and urban developments. As the remaining forests become smaller and scattered, the wood thrush are left with less food and more threats from predators. We can help wood thrushes and forest birds everywhere by conserving and restoring woodlands throughout the Americas. That includes planting native trees in urban green spaces and buying bird-friendly coffee that's cultivated without destroying the crucial habitats that support the wood thrush's priceless song. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support comes from Wild Delight Bird Food, offering a variety of blends designed to mimic the natural resources wild birds crave. Available at Chewy.com.
We're from the Kiwassaw Preteen Spring Camp. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University on Burnaby Mountain.
Sego.
Buju Anim.
Danach A. At Anzeni Shook with An.
Tanse.
Ay, Inu Hadikai.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Hi, I'm Christine Genier. Welcome to Words and Culture.